There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
That was a little strange. Jonathan, our producer, tell me, did to me it sounded like that intro song was a cappella. Was there music behind? Did you guys hear music? Okay, all right. Must be on my end. So anyway, it's been a while. So welcome to today's WCN TV program. We're broadcasting live, and it's Tuesday, August 12th, 2025. Like I said, it's been a while, and it's good to be back with you all here. I had a busy month of July catching up on projects, had been on the back burner. So our program was on hiatus for the month of July, and then last week was production week for the new edition of Wisconsin Christian News. So I'm thankful to J.R. Harrison for filling in and hosting the show for me. Those production weeks are pretty rough, but the new edition of the paper's coming out tomorrow, so those of you who are subscribers, you can start watching it for it in your mailbox. It's on the way. Today, we are blessed to be joined by John Guandolo as our guest. I'm sure many of you already know his work, but just as a short introduction, John's a former FBI agent and national security consultant and expert. He helps identify and dismantle domestic and foreign threats in local communities. And speaking of domestic threats, John was interviewed as a former FBI agent for the new movie about J6. It's called The War on Truth. Before we bring John in, I think it'd be good for us to watch the trailer for this movie. So let's just do that now quickly to illustrate the depths of the lies and deception from our own government regarding J6. I'm going to mute my microphone. We'll watch this movie real quick.
I didn't want to make this too painful. I don't think this conversation is going to take probably 4 to 5 or 10 minutes.
You know what you do after the FBI investigates you for making a movie about January 6th?
You make another one.
With investigations related to child sex trafficking, have you reassigned any of these agents?
I don't believe we have reassigned people away from child exploitation.
Why?
So to be clear, the FBI moved you off a pedophile task force to a January 6th task force. Yeah.
We have not to date seen any evidence of anarchist violent extremists or people subscribing to Antifa in connection with the 6th.
Lie.
Antifa! Antifa!
If you are asking whether the violence at the Capitol on January 6th was part of some operation orchestrated by FBI sources and or agents, the answer is emphatically
not. You're saying no?
No.
Why?
There's five people, okay, that want to come forward to say that we have facial recognition of all the federal agents.
100 officers were assaulted on that day. 5 officers died.
That was a lie.
Killed by a blow to the head with a fire extinguisher.
Lie.
Died after being hit in the head with a fire extinguisher.
Lie.
They fixate on the deaths that are not attributed to January 6th while completely ignoring what these really horrific deaths of 4 Trump supporters that afternoon.
The scariest thing about this movie is when you show people the truth, they believe it, and they come together as Americans. We unite. If this movie wasn't so dangerous to the cabal, if this movie wasn't so dangerous to the deep state, they wouldn't be trying so hard to censor it.
Don't be afraid, people. Go see this movie. Hey, can I help me?
Yes, sir. Are you all open today?
Not today, we're not.
Director Ray?
No, he's not here today.
Can I leave him a message?
Well, I can't give him a message. You got to call to the public relations department.
Yeah, we called and left a message.
We did that for a couple months. Could you ask him if he's still investigating me for making the last movie?
No, I'll see when we do that.
I appreciate that, sir.
Thank you, sir.
That's truly disappointing.
He'd just say the same lies to us that he said to Congress.
Okay, I have not seen that movie, but I would, I'm planning to. Jonathan, you will, our producer, you will put that in the show notes for today so people can find the link and you can watch it online. I think it's safe to say what happened on J6 was one of the darkest times in our American Republic, as our so-called Justice Department is weaponized against our own citizens. What happened to so many patriotic, innocent people was inconceivable. This is something we should never forget, but instead learn from as the truth is finally being exposed. All right, John, thanks for being so patient with me here, and thanks for taking time to be with us on the show today. I think we're going to have a great discussion. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Rob.
First, if you would, tell us your take on the J6 situation, and then we'll move on, because I know there's a lot we want to get to today.
Well, first of all, I think it's important for your viewers to know that I was present on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. I was part of a group right out front of the Capitol. We had a space that was we had a permit for. I did not arrange it, but it was a prayer group, and people like Michelle Bachman were there and some other people that I knew. And the purpose of this group was to pray for America. And I was invited by a pastor in the DFW area, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I decided to go. I wasn't originally going to go. Glad I did. However, because of my presence there, I landed on a TSA watch list for 19 months after that, which was problematic. But all I did was exert my First Amendment rights and pray for America. But I did get a firsthand view of what went on there. And what was surprising to me was spending the whole day there and the previous couple days walking around that area and seeing people in the evenings preceding it, people singing, people praying, and then going back to my hotel on January 6th in the evening and watching it being portrayed as something that it was very different from what I witnessed.
Yes, and several weeks ago, we had our good friend, Pastor Bill Dunphy, on the program, who actually was persecuted and prosecuted with lawfare and ultimately sent to prison and in the end pardoned. So we have good friends that were involved with this, and they all paid a price. So, but let's keep things moving here because we have a lot to get to. You've also studied and become an expert on Islamic Jihad and the global threat that Islam poses. You co-authored the book Sharia, the Threat to America in 2010 and wrote Raising a Jihadi Generation in 2013, followed by Islam's Deception, the Truth About Sharia in 2019. You know, we're not hearing a lot about Islam in the news these days, certainly not like we did during the Obama administration when there were daily Islamic attacks around the world. But tell us just briefly about the overall real dangers that Islam poses today for America and all free nations around the world. And then after that, we're going to get more specific on enemy combatants that are already here.
Sure. Well, I think if we just start with explaining Islam, when I talk about or teach Islam to any group, I like to use the textbooks that are used in U.S. Islamic schools across America and Europe to teach children, 10, 11, 12-year-old children about Islam. in Islamic schools. And when you actually open those books, you see that, number one, what is taught about Islam is what Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, Hamas, and others teach about Islam. And that raises some questions. More specifically, when you look at what 10-year-old Muslim children are taught about Islam in U.S. Islamic schools, you realize that what they're being taught is that the purpose of Islam is to wage war against non-Muslims until a global Islamic state is established and Sharia, Islamic law, imposed on the earth. And that's it. It's no more complicated than that. And so here's a good starting point. How is it that what Muslim leaders publicly say and tell U.S. leaders about Islam is exactly opposite of what Muslim children are taught about Islam in U.S. Islamic schools? And I'm going to answer that question.
It's a good question. I think it's called taqiyya, right?
Well, the reason is, in Islam, or the things we need to consider when looking at the answer, is in Sharia, in Islamic law, it's a capital crime for Muslims to teach Muslim children anything about Islam that's not true. And it is obligatory, the language in Islamic law, Sharia, it's obligatory to lie to non-Muslims if the goal is obligatory. And the goal of Islam is to impose Sharia on the earth. So that answers the question. What Muslims teach other Muslims about Islam has to be true Islam. And Muslims are obliged legally to lie to non-Muslims in order to advance Islam. That's normative Islamic law. So I think that's a good place to begin the discussion, because deception is at the heart of Islam, that Islam is not does not worship the same God Jews and Christians does. As a matter of fact, Islam does not define itself as a religion. Islam specifically says Islam is not a religion. It's a total way of life governed by real law. It's a totalitarian system governed by law, Sharia. And when you realize that what presidents, you know, Clinton through Bush and on, said about Islam is factually not true. Mr. Trump is the only president from Mr. Clinton forward to publicly say, I think Islam hates us and we need to get to the bottom of it. But all the other presidents have done things that actually advance the Islamic movement in the United States.
All right. So on your blog, you stated what America is experiencing right now is the culmination of a 100-year communist movement and a 60-year Islamic movement in the United States. Both movements seek to destroy America's constitutional republic. You can find that on John's website. Before we move on, I'd just like to show you a short video from Project Veritas about the jihadis that were purposely imported here from the Afghanistan evacuation and through our southern and northern borders under the Biden administration. People need to see this in order to grasp the gravity of the situation we're in. It's only a few minutes, and then I promise I'll stop with the videos.
A source inside the federal government has come forward to reveal suspected terrorists are roaming freely inside the United States following the Biden administration's exit strategy in Afghanistan and the government's initiative to shelter fleeing refugees, known as Operation Allies Welcome.
I am so, so proud of what we were capable of doing and what we did in Operation Allies Welcome.
We have evacuated nearly 28,000 people on both U.S. and coalition aircraft. We are conducting thorough security screening. Anyone arriving in the United States will have undergone a background check.
The records we've obtained confirm these individuals as national security threats currently within our borders. Meet Anwar Halak Wahidi, who is classified as a Category 15 threat by the Department of Homeland Security for having used explosives or arms. Category 15 falls under the Tier 1 threat level, which is labeled as armed and dangerous. Documents further reveal he was only added to the terrorist watch list after already being admitted into the U.S. on October 17, 2021, under Operation Allies Welcome. Wahidi applied the next day for his two-year work visa, and 10 days later, it was approved. Nazir Ahmad Rahimi entered the U.S. on August 24, 2021. Flagged by DHS because he has engaged or is likely to engage in an unspecified violent terrorist act, despite being apprehended by ICE while in the U.S., he is yet to be deported, and his last known address is in our nation's capital. Ismail Jarrat arrived in the U.S. on August 31, 2021. Less than a month later, he was re-added to the terror watch list as a Category 15 for having used explosives or arms. Since then, his work visa has been approved. Tasinola Wafa Manazile was paroled into the U.S. on October 14, 2021. The next day, he was re-added to the terror watch list as a Category 7 threat if enters the U.S., and also approved for his two-year work visa. Iqbal Alakoze was arrested in Afghanistan on December 11, 2014 and charged with murder. But that didn't stop him from being paroled into the U.S. on August 25, 2021. Records indicate ICE dismissed his case, saying it, quote, does not meet ICE enforcement priorities, unquote. He remains in the U.S. and his work visa is pending. This doesn't even begin to scratch the surface. Those we've investigated are just a small sample size, all of whom still remain within our borders. Our source inside the federal government has identified numerous cases involving people who pose national security risks. This begs the question, how could this be happening?
I am so proud, so proud of what we were capable of doing and what we did in Operation Allies Welcome. Thousands of our Afghan allies paroled into the United States, swiftly received employment authorization. We're also continuing to work with the State Department to improve the efficacy, integrity, security, and transparency of the U.S. refugee admissions program, which, as you know, was almost dismantled over the last 4 years.
To date, Operation Allies Welcome has brought over 84,000 Afghan refugees into the United States. According to our source, known terrorists are also gaining access to the country through the southern border, as millions of people stream across unchecked every year. Our federal agencies are clearly aware of the crisis, yet seem to prioritize accelerated vetting over the security of Americans. This is only the beginning of our investigation. Stay tuned.
And it's everywhere, folks. It's not just the big cities we're talking. It's not just Minneapolis and Detroit anymore. Just this afternoon, I was on my way to the post office, and an Islamic woman crossed the street in front of me, covered head to toe in the black, whatever that is, a little slit for the eyes, and they have been integrated into our society. John, why do you think our own government would intentionally do this?
So this is a great, I love that we're diving into this. So there's why the government's doing it. I think because the Biden administration was operating against the United States. We have plenty of evidence about that now from the Russia collusion investigation, from the China investigation. He's involved in espionage, aiding and abetting communist China, working with Mr. Obama, John Brennan, Victoria Nuland, Jeffrey Pyatt, the ambassador to Ukraine, with Ukrainian security officials in the, quote, Russia collusion investigation to aid Mrs. Trump and detract Mr. Trump, or aid Mrs. Clinton and be a detractor to Mr. Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. So I think there's plenty of evidence of the treason and felonies that have been committed at the highest levels, including the as I mentioned, the lies put out by 51 intelligence officers, including five directors of Central Intelligence, the DNI and many others about Hunter Biden's laptop. So you have real traitors, real communists, real jihadis inside our government. So let's just put that on the table. And that's a matter of fact and evidence that we now are very clear. And quite frankly, we've known for 7 or 8 years now. But let's talk about this. First of all, Afghans, if we're going to talk about this, Ms. Yadav, who was in charge of immigration for the United States, either intentionally let terrorists in the country or she was grossly negligent, which makes her criminally negligent because Americans are dead because of her negligence, because of her malfeasance. So that's misprision of treason. It's conspiring to facilitate terrorism or material support of terrorism. And either way, she should be certainly not in the government, certainly in jail. But let's talk about this. You played the clip there where Mr. Biden said these Afghans were vetted. That's a flat out lie. And he knew it was a lie coming out of his lips. Why? Number one, Afghans cannot be vetted. Why can they not be vetted? Because there is no mechanism to vet them. There's no DMV in Afghanistan. There's no common network. These, what are you going to do? Go to their village and interview 15 people that are going to lie anyway about them. So the fact that the notion that Afghans can be vetted is a flat out lie. Now, what if they could be vetted? Let's look at the history in the last 20 years to 30 years of how American, the U.S. federal government has done vetting people. Let me just throw a few examples out. Abdurrahman Alamoudi was the, quote, Islamic advisor to President Clinton and Vice President Gore for 8 years. And he had access to the president more than any other Muslim in America. He founded 24 of the largest Muslim organizations in North America. He was hailed by the Washington Post as the pillar of the Muslim community, and he was given accolades. Well, he was arrested in 2003 because he in Heathrow's airport in London because he had a suitcase full of $360,000 cash for the global jihad. He was taken to Damascus, Syria. And he was a financier for Al-Qaeda, the largest financier for Al-Qaeda in North America. And he was convicted and sentenced to 21 years in federal prison in 2004. He actually pled guilty. And we had all the information on who he was and what he was doing. Gulmurad Kalimov was trained between 2005 and 2014, five times by the State Department in tactics and weapons training in the United States, and he was an ISIS commander. How's our vetting doing? Nada Prouty was a special agent for the FBI and a case officer for the CIA, and she was Hezbollah and pled guilty. And then, of course, went on Oprah and cried about, you know, she was just treated poorly because she's, you know, of a ethnic descent and all this other garbage. We can do that. We can go through these examples all day long. What's the point? The point is that there is no effective vetting in the U.S. government, in the U.S. military. Meher Bitar was the director of intelligence up until 7 months ago for the National Security Council, Meher Bitar, and he's Hamas. Okay, so Farouk Mitha was the Islamic advisor to candidate Clinton, Hillary Clinton, when she was running for president, and for candidate Joe Biden when he was running for president. Now, why a presidential candidate needs an Islamic advisor, I have no freaking clue. But he's Hamas. He sits on the board of the Hamas group Mgage. So this is the U.S. government, their inability. And let me just say this. All of the Islamic leaders meeting with directors of Central Intelligence, FBI directors, national security staffs, 100% are hostile. They're jihadis. We can go through the list by name if you need, but hopefully these are enough specific examples to give your audience an understanding of two things. Number one, in the case you're bringing up, Afghans can't be vetted. But even if they could, the U.S. government has a 30-year history of being criminally negligent, and specifically under certain administrations like the Obama and Biden administrations, where they knowingly and willfully supported terrorists inside the administrations.
Yes, and I'm going to get into that. I've got a lot of stuff for you. I don't know if we're going to make it, but before we do, this is a big question. When we were emailing, you told me that currently we have about 500,000 communists and jihadi soldiers in the U.S. Soldiers, not just refugees. We have soldiers in the U.S. What are they doing? What's their mission, and what groups are they aligned with?
So we have, as you know, because you've talked about it, tens of thousands, and I would argue well over 100,000 hostile Chinese military-age males that have come into the country. And that was just during the Biden administration. And that's been discussed. There's been testimony on that. And the estimates range anywhere from 40,000 to well over 200,000 people. And some even think the number is much higher than that. We have coming into this country from hostile jihadi countries, hundreds of thousands. We have in the country already, we know that groups like Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and others have moved their trained soldiers into the country. And let me just, I want to make sure everyone understands, the Trump administration is not immune to this. There was a guy that was named to the Religious Liberty Commission for the United States, whose name is Todd Randall, Ishmael Todd Randall, Randall Royer. And who is this guy? Well, he's a convicted terrorist. And legally, someone could say, well, John, he wasn't convicted of terrorism. Okay, that's because he had a plea deal with the government. But I can tell you the evidence of what he did is in the affidavit. It's in the charging documents. It was a case that when I was in the FBI, my squad worked that case. And Randall Todd Royer went overseas and fought as a Mujahideen in combat, came back, went back overseas to Pakistan and trained for at least 6 weeks in a Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorist training camp. That's a designated terrorist organization, and then came back to Northern Virginia to recruit people. And that was the case that our squad worked. He was recruiting people in Northern Virginia to go overseas and fight for a designated terrorist organization. And he's now a part of the U.S. Religious Liberty Commission with the blessing of President Trump's administration. And you ask why? Well, because he says he's reformed. So based on his personal word, which is garbage, as you might expect, we're just giving him a pass. And I refer back to the vetting problem in the U.S. government. The U.S. government is incapable of effective vetting. So let me go back. I'm just, dropping that in the bucket so people understand how bad the situation is. The situation is you have hundreds of thousands, and I would say at least 500,000 of these communists and jihadis in the United States. They have a massive network that's made up of every prominent Islamic organization. And when I say that, I mean the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, the Islamic Society of North America, Islamic Circle of North America, the Muslim Student Associations, the Muslim American Society, the Council on American Islamic Relations, Students for Justice in Palestine, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and all these others, as well as all these communist groups from Communist Party USA, Democratic Socialists of America, RevCom, Answer, Code Pink, Green Party, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the whole lot of them. And you're talking about thousands of chapters of these organizations across the United States that is the network that support these soldiers here. And that evidence dates back to the 80s. It dates back, you can go through the 9/11 Commission report. And so far, zero has been done by six administrations to actually put their finger on the bad guys and vanquish the enemy, which is easily identifiable. So we know from intelligence that Al-Qaeda is planning a major operation in the United States. We know the communists have already been ramping up on the streets violently across the United States. We've seen it on college campuses in cities like New York and elsewhere, and nothing has been done by local state police, by state investigative agencies, by the FBI, DHS. So what do you think is going to happen? That's the situation. This is a war being waged by hostile foreign countries, China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Egypt, UAE, Pakistan, using these networks here in the United States, by the way, directly controlling them. And we know these, the communist networks, Black Lives Matter, Chinese Progressive Association, Asians for Black Lives, and these huge networks are directly working with Chinese Communist Party officials and taking direction from them in the U.S. Chinese consulates. And we allow these consulates to remain open. Nothing is being, this is just a, it's not just catastrophic failure by the federal government. It's complete open warfare by these hostile foreign powers using the proxies in the United States. And our leaders at the state and federal level aren't just doing nothing. The actions they're taking are actually advancing the Islamic movement and the communist movement. So I think you have massive violent operations that are already in play, that are already prepared. And I think when this thing breaks, Americans aren't going to know which way to turn. And the Trump administration certainly is doing nothing to crush and vanquish these enemies. Here's the point. Mr. Trump has implemented policies economically, at the border, internally, that are helpful and I think are good. What they're not doing and what hasn't been done for 30 years is to identify the actual enemy and vanquish them. And yeah, that's not being done. And we're going to pay a heavy, heavy price for it.
People are afraid to say it out loud, but the truth is the truth. And now we're looking at the very real possibility of New York City having an Islamic mayor. But
a jihadi.
Yeah, approximately how many communists and Muslims or people with dual citizenships, put it that way, are currently holding political office in this country? Ilhan Omar comes to mind immediately. We all know that. But we really have no idea the scope of this, do we?
No, we don't. And that's exactly, you just nailed it, is that we don't know the scope of it. What we do know is, let me take a moment to explain this, because this is a key part of how the, specifically the Islamic movement, achieves what they're doing. And it's a term called splinter operations. So the idea is the enemy will keep splintering off a portion of itself to appear more moderate so that they can keep advancing what they're doing. So I'll run through this very quickly. After 9/11, the key Muslim Brotherhood and others, organizations, individuals that were leaders in these organizations, the Islamic Society of North America, Council on American Islamic Relations, Muslim American Society et al., show up in suits and say, hey, you know, we worked with the Clinton and Bush, you know, Clinton administration. We'll work with you. You know, we worked with so-and-so. We've worked with the State Department. So they're welcomed in with open arms. And they, of course, wearing suits, they point to the Al-Qaeda jihadis and say, of course, they're radical. We don't believe that. We're the good Muslims. And so we welcome them in, and they help us form foreign policy and counterterrorism strategy, except they're the exact same people as Al-Qaeda. They're just wearing suits. And the way they try to defeat us is more in terms of counterintelligence operations, political warfare, espionage, subversion, whereas Al-Qaeda is military jihad. But they're all on the same team. So over time, as Americans and some leaders start to understand that groups like ISNA, ICNA, NATE, CARE, Muslim American Society are actually part of the Muslim Brotherhood and they're hostile, they splinter off again and they feed us the quote unquote moderate Muslim, Raheel Razas, the Kanta Ahmeds, the Zudi Jassers. And so they come to us and say, yeah, the Muslim Brotherhood is bad, but we're good. And we're so not you and I, and maybe not your audience, but our leadership at the federal and state level are such incompetent cowards that they just want to embrace someone who's a Muslim who doesn't want to kill us, or so they think. So they embrace these people and they bring them in, and the disaster continues. Now we're in what I call the final splinter, the so-called conservative, patriotic, Republican Muslims. And so far in our analysis, 100% of them are hostile. And so we've got some of these people like Bilal Isaili, who goes by the name of Bill, because that sounds better. And he, you know, wears the American flag pig and he's a Republican. So Mr. Trump makes him the U.S. Attorney for Los Angeles. And it's another defeat in this war. You've got Sophia Farouk, a quote unquote conservative Republican who dresses, you know, with her red, white and blue scarves and runs for the GOP chair in Cobb County, Georgia, which you probably know is a pretty important county. And of course, she's the granddaughter of Maududi, one of the two greatest jihadi ideologues of the 20th century. And she's a proud Muslim who reveres her grandfather. And this is called an investigative clue that she too is hostile. And there are a lot of other keys, but the point is, this nonsense has to be addressed. And we have to be able to say Islam, true Islam, the normative and universally taught Islam that Muslim children are taught in U.S. Islamic schools, in Canadian Islamic schools, in European Islamic schools, in the Middle East, in Asia, is barbaric and it's hostile to liberty and it has no place in civilized society. But our leaders are too gutless to actually speak truth. And in my research, I think we have six world leaders, and they're not even heads of state, just somewhere in European parliaments that are actually speaking truthfully about the barbarity and the evil that is Islam. And it's sick and it's sad that we can't scrape together two U.S. leaders anywhere to actually speak truth, even in this administration.
Yeah, well said. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit in just a little bit, but I do want to open things up for our audience. Anyone with questions? I know there's at least one guy that has a question. If you raise your hand, we'll bring you into the show. JR?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. John, yeah. John, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I very, very much appreciate where the battle rages, there's where the valor of the soldier is proved. And you, brother, are right in the middle of the heat. The problem is that I don't know how somebody in office could actually try to do what you're doing because of public opinion. And it's just being controlled. And I'll ask this question. To your knowledge, has there ever been a nation or a country that has been able to escape the invasion by Islam?
The invasion by what?
By Islam. Yep.
Sure. On the battlefield, you vanquish them physically, and it's going to come to that in the United States. There's no, we can live in unicorn land and fantasy land, but the reality is because of the nature of the war and the nature of where we are, what I've just described, and the fact our leaders, including the current administration, aren't doing anything about it. You have to understand from their perspective, from the Islamic and communist movement's perspective, they're in the final phases of their war here.
Yeah.
They literally believe it's the only thing left to do is get it on, is to go violent. This is important, maybe for, I appreciate the question, maybe for your audience. You have to understand, in the Islamic community in the United States, there is an ongoing friction between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic community, meaning Muslim citizens who want to raise the black flag over the mosques and go violent. And the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to hold that back and has been for well over 6 months. Then you've got Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State. And again, the Muslim Brotherhood is not a nonviolent organization. Their military wing is called the Special Section, and they're here in the United States. And so the friction is Islamic law requires military jihad when they believe the country is ready to fall. That's one of the criticisms Osama bin Laden got after 9/11 was he acted too soon before everything was in place. And it was one of the disagreements between the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda, even though Osama bin Laden was a Muslim brother. So this is really important. But the key is they believe they're in the final phase. And our leaders are acting like it's business as usual, like we're just going to create some legislation and we're going to hold a political rally. They're willing, and ready. I mean, when this thing kicks off, it's going to be like nothing America's ever seen. And you're going to see it cascade across Europe and across North America. And I don't believe the West is ready for this.
Okay. Russ, come on in. Need to unmute your mic, Russ. Oh, I thought you had your hand raised. Okay, all right. Well, we'll move on. So, John, if you just tuned in, we're talking with John Guandolo. The only way that I see this being possible on this large of a scale is that it's got to be part of the overall globalist agenda. And we know the globalists want to do away with borders and national sovereignty, and they'll use any and all methods available, including Islam, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a tool they can use, so they're going to use it.
That's absolutely true. And you bring up a great point, and I'd like to take that just for a minute or two in this direction. So yes, we see the leaders of the global Islamic movement, the International Muslim Brotherhood, the Muslim World League, the OIC, which is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. That's the largest voting bloc in the UN. It's 57 member organization. That's 56 heads of state of the Muslim world, all 56 nations. And the 57th is what they call the State of Palestine. All these organizations, they work with the World Economic Forum, the International, Communist Movement, all these things. But here's, the work that I do is going into local communities, and our team trains local communities how to identify the leaders and organizations that make up the Communist and Islamic movement in the county and how to lawfully flush them out, while simultaneously reestablishing the founding principles at the county government level. Now, why? Well, I'll ask rhetorically what we ask when we're doing the training. What can you do about the UN? What can you do about the World Economic Forum? What can you do about the secular humanist movement? And the answer is nothing. But what you can do is where their policies touch your county, you can cut them off like a bad tentacle. And what you can do is identify, because here's why this matters. Where the rubber meets the road in Nashville, Tennessee, where I live in Dallas, in Houston, in Los Angeles, in Wichita, Kansas, in Charlotte, North Carolina, in Miami, in Phoenix, Arizona, in Seattle, in Portland, and fill in the blank. It is the communists and jihadis working seamlessly at the ground level. They are the ones actually where the rubber meets the road, getting the work done, the violent and the nonviolent. So that's the key. So what we're doing is we're taking away their ability to operate county by county. And we're just, the work we're doing has to be scaled greatly. But over the years we've been doing it, we've had great success. But it's important that people understand, don't get wrapped around World Economic Forum and all these other things. Are they threats? Absolutely, they're threats to liberty. But because of the nature of how this war is being fought, because of how corrupt the U.S. federal government is, this has to be fought at the local level by citizens. Think about it this way. In the last 30 plus years, name one governor that's identified the threat and taken actions to vanquish them. There's not one. Even the best governors we've had, they've changed policies. They've done things like that, but they actually haven't put their hands on the bad guys and vanquished them, crushed them like the cockroaches they are. This has to be done. Because there are still some things that can be done, but this, we are cascading, we are rolling headlong into a kinetic war. There's no way at this point, I don't see any way that's not going to happen, because there's nothing stopping it.
So you mentioned when we were emailing prior to this, you mentioned assassinations and destruction of our key infrastructures. Do you really think they want to take down our infrastructure?
Yeah, absolutely.
They put a lot of money into 5 and 6G, into that grid under the cover of COVID when people were locked down. And most people never even noticed the refrigerator-sized boxes that are now on cell towers just right about everywhere, or the 5 and 6G repeaters built into streetlights. It doesn't seem like they'd want to destroy all that. It's kind of a key component.
Okay, so that's a great question, Rob.
The total surveillance and control, isn't it?
That's right. They don't have to destroy it, but they do want to control it. You know, I did a report 9 years ago now. Yeah, 9 years ago. And laid out the infrastructure of this network. And even back then, the numbers were huge. We see Muslims that have bought up. And we've done, I'm talking with law enforcement and tactical leadership and SWAT teams at the federal and state level that have done surveys across the country. I mean, I was the SWAT team leader for the FBI's Washington field office. I come from a military special operations background. So these are things we do. And what we've seen over the last 15 years is Muslims buying up gas stations, quick marts, things like that. Think logistics, right? As you mentioned, we've seen Muslims who have become managers for local water treatment facilities. We've seen a number of things like this. The hotels. You go into the 30 biggest cities in America, I would argue it's probably more than that now, but this was a survey that we did years ago. And you have the manager, or at least one assistant manager, who's Muslim. That's statistically, that's impossible.
If you look it up, it's the owners who are Muslim.
And in some cases, I started
seeing that in the 1990s.
That's right. So my point is, they are quietly taking over infrastructure. Nobody cares, because they're like, hey, what's wrong with a Muslim own a hotel? Well, because here's my question. Why have they taken over the biggest hotels, at least as managers? In some cases, you're right, as the owners in the biggest cities across the United States. It's because we know from their doctrine and we know from their strategic plans that what they're doing prior to the kinetic war is they are doing disinformation and intelligence collection. And who holds conferences at hotels? Everybody, right? Intelligence, professional organizations, law enforcement, all these people. And it's an intelligence gaining operation. That's what they're doing. But nobody cares. Here's the point. I haven't seen anyone in any position of authority that I briefed that even cared. So that's what I mean. This is going to come to a kinetic war. And when it does, the people who should be held accountable are the people who have been in leadership positions at the state and federal level in Republican and Democrat administrations. Now, do I think they'll be held accountable? No, but that's why the work we're doing is to try to get communities organized and prepared as quick as possible and as many counties as we can.
Okay. We're down about 10 minutes. I'm going to go on another rabbit trail here. Okay. What do we know about enemy soldiers and enemy military training camps just over our borders in Canada and Mexico?
Okay. So let me first start by saying we know there are jihadi training camps in the United States.
Yeah, right. Yep.
But for your, let me just take a minute and say for your listeners who don't know, there are a number of things we can talk about, but there are two I just want to mention. When we raided a home of a guy named Ishmael El Barassi in August of 2004 in Annandale, Virginia, we essentially found what can be described as the archives of the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas in the U.S. and really in North America. And one of the things that was discovered was an audio tape of a 1981 meeting. So this was in 2004. Was an audio tape from 1981 of a member of the Muslim Brotherhood's executive board for North America, speaking to a group of Muslim brothers in Missouri in 1981. And that tape was transcribed as an official part, official piece of evidence, put into the U.S. versus Holy Land Foundation trial, which was adjudicated in Dallas, Texas in 2008. That was the largest terrorism financing trial ever successfully prosecuted in U.S. history. And what in that speech and during the Q&A, it's very clear that there are jihadi training camps across the United States. They're openly discussing them and discussing the purpose of them and what they're doing. That's in 1981. So do you think they just packed up and went home? Of course not. We have plenty of evidence of continuing jihadi camps. We also have a lot of information about a group called the Muslims of America here, which is a Pakistani-based terrorist group operating here as Muslims of America that has training camps across the United States. That's been documented. It's been videoed. There's plenty of evidence about that. And some of those pieces, their investigations have been done piecemeal, but no strategic investigation done of that. So I just put that on the table to say we have jihadi training camps in the United States. So, yes, there are training camps in Mexico. There are training camps in Canada. And those governments are not only not doing anything about it, I would argue the Canadian government is overtly supporting the jihadis in Canada not in the regional level, but at the national level in Canada.
And the Chinese communists, not to mention.
Mexico as well.
And the Chinese communists.
Absolutely.
So, what you said about right here in the U.S., our friend Doug Hagman is a private investigator, and he did an investigation, got all the information on a jihadi training camp here in the U.S., including video footage of them using automatic weapons on a school bus.
Right.
He had all the information. He turned the entire file over to the FBI. A couple days later, he gets a knock on the door from the FBI saying, "You never saw this. We never saw this. You don't know anything about this. And it's best if you just let this go." And the next day, his car mysteriously exploded. So I'm just saying, we're going to have Doug on in 2 weeks, so maybe we'll get into that topic. But this is really happening, folks. So what do you think their timeline is? First of all, let me ask you, do you think Trump is for real, or is he just another figurehead for an alternative movement and part of the same old political theater?
So I do not believe Mr. Trump is same old, same old.
Okay.
The way I evaluate this, and when I was in the DOD, I had a little bit better handle on it, but also immediately afterwards, because I got out of the DOD prior to Mr. Trump coming to the fourfold, but I still worked with those guys and collaborated with them. if you go back to the 1980s, the 1990s, the 2000s, and listen to what Mr. Trump said and did, he has a consistent message over four plus decades. So I think he's for real. I think he is a patriot, but he has people around him that are hostile, that are doing the same thing they did during the first administration. They're trying to keep him from having a strategic understanding of these threats, and keeping people who actually get it from being in charge of the agencies that could actually use the force of the Constitution to vanquish these enemies. So it's the same problem we've had since the Clinton administration. I just think it's much worse today because they know if he understood this, he more than anyone would probably use his executive powers and take swift action.
So getting back to my other question, what do you think their timeline is? Do you think they're going to wait Trump out, or do you think they're going to do something during his term?
So neither the communist movement or the Islamic movement operate under what most people consider a timeline. They operate under, you know, both doctrinally from the communists, from Lenin, who, you know, wrote, you know, guideposts along the road, and from the Islamic movement's perspective, milestones. They operate under specific milestones that when those milestones are achieved, then they start moving to the next one. And but that said, for the last 2 years, they've internally been wrestling with which way to go. We've never seen, meaning violent or continued, the sporadic violence and primarily the non-kinetic route. But there are so many intelligence indicators on the table right now. They have so many things in place, and they've been testing the waters now for several years, violently, and especially recently with what we've seen on college campuses, these hostile marches through streets of big cities with tens of thousands of people. And now they're overtly calling for the destruction of the United States at the same time, meaning the communists, the communist movement and the jihadi movement. Meanwhile, we have Al-Qaeda that's set to launch major operations. So I would say, you know, I have some colleagues that are like, you know, we're in that 3 to 5 year window. I can't imagine it being more than a year. So in the next 12 months.
Okay. So we are just about out of time. John, you are willing to come and speak and do training sessions for people that want to be educated on what they can do at the county level, correct?
Absolutely. And that training is a 1 to 2 day program, depending on what the county wants, called Into Action. It's the Into Action training, and we train people how to build their team, how to lawfully identify and vanquish the communists and jihadis out of your county, and how to reestablish founding principles using really a myriad of techniques and tactics to do so, all lawful. And then we have a number of other programs, 2 to 3 day programs for law enforcement, first responders, National Guard, and then our 2 week train the trainer program, which actually trains people how to teach this material. You can communicate or reach out to me through johnguandolo.com, the website. If you want regular daily updates on current events, I'm on X at J, the initial J, Guandolo, and then a string of numbers. But if you just look up J Guandolo, G-U-A-N-D-O-L-O, you will find me on the social media platform formerly known as Twitter on X. But I encourage people, johnguandolo.com. We have a lot of resources. I've got, it's all about Sharia videos that are very comprehensive, and the books, Raising a Jihadi Generation and Islam's Deception, all for sale, but also a lot of free resources. And of course, the blog, with a lot of information. So encourage people.
And what does it take to get you to do a session?
So really, you've got to get at least 25 people in your county, in your community, and then really set a date. And then we, once you reach out to the website, we'll coordinate with you about making that happen.
Okay, great. John, thank you for being here. We are out of time. And I didn't even get through, well, I got through three quarters of my questions, so that's doing pretty good.
That's good. So,
all right. Folks, share the program, if you would. Share it on your social media. We are not allowed on Facebook. Well, we chose not to be on Facebook anymore. Share it on your social media. Share it with your friends. Get this information out. I'm going to be on the road next week. Dr. Mike will be here. I will be back in 2 weeks with Doug Hagman as my guest. Until then, God bless. We'll see you then.